Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
The Bible teaches much about the life and death and resurrection of Jesus and about the early Christians who carried on his message. But there's also a lot we can find in between the lines of the Bible as well and beyond about the kind of society Jesus was born into, the kind of people he preached to, and the kind of impression he left on the religious climate of the day. Well, thank God for historians, I reckon, because they can help us understand some of this kind of between-the-lines backstory stuff to help us appreciate the Bible better and, of course, Jesus. Darren Graham is one such historian. His book is called The First Christians, Not Just Ancient History. Intriguing title, and he joins us in the studio now on Open House. Darren, welcome.
It's great to be here. It's a privilege and an honour.
And same here. I love this topic.
Oh, good.
Bit about yourself first. You've studied ancient history and theology, even written for archaeological magazines. I'm impressed.
Yes, I studied history at Macquarie University, and I've just finished a master's in ancient history at the University of Sydney. I've done a little bit of theology through More Theological College. And yes, I write for Archaeological Diggings magazine. I have done so for a few years now. I love it.
What got you interested in this whole realm of ancient history?
Well, originally, just to fill in school subjects, that was all. Just
no special attraction?
No special attraction at all, but I soon found that it was a way that I could investigate the Bible, the Bible's claims about Jesus' divinity, his existence, essentially, the beliefs espoused by him and the first Christians. It was a way that I could investigate for myself claims made in ancient historical times.
Why did you need to do that? Because a whole lot of people wouldn't feel that need to do it.
Well, I've discovered by my own investigations that there is no real need, because faith in Jesus is based on solid, concrete fact. You don't have to be a historian to find that out. It could be through life experiences, contemplation, so forth.
Yes.
But for me, I had to find things out my own way, and that's how I did it, through historical investigation.
What made you begin writing a book about the earliest Christians? That intrigues me.
Well, through reading the Bible and reading historical sources, especially the ancient historical sources, I soon found that I wanted to share what I'd discovered with other people. I wanted to share how solid faith in Jesus really is. It's not based on myth. It's not based on forced perceptions or forced government policies, as it has been in the past in some countries, with some religions. For me, it really is a living, breathing faith in Jesus. And yeah, I discovered that too in history. It's been a living, breathing faith, historical fact.
So what is it about the New Testament accounts of Jesus, the Gospels, that make them trustworthy historical documents and not just things that have been cobbled together, or, as you say, myths?
Well, they haven't been cobbled together at all. They're a collection of books and letters, but they were written by the earliest Christians. They are the earliest known historical sources on Jesus and the disciples. They were written largely by the disciples, and you only have to cross-section letters and gospels in the New Testament to see that there's very few inconsistencies, and the very few inconsistencies that there are very minor. They're over some details.
How seriously did those who recorded and transmitted and ultimately translated these accounts, how seriously did they take their work?
I think they took it very seriously. You only have to look at Luke's Gospel and the Book of Acts, which he also wrote, to see that a lot of research went into what they were writing about, the gospel writers, I mean, or Matthew's, his sources he talks about, such as Joseph, Jesus' father. Luke talks about Mary, Jesus' mother. They seriously undertook what they did with the best intentions for the readers in mind.
They weren't too biased being too close to Jesus and his movement?
Well, they openly admitted what they believed was the truth.
Yes.
There's no denying that. But I think that truth is a tried and tested in the sense that at that time, you know, Jesus wasn't acting in a corner of the world, as Paul would say, or you know, things that happened in Jesus' ministry weren't secret. They weren't esoteric. They weren't for a select few. They were done in the open. Sermon on the Mount, of course, was taught in the countryside. Jesus taught in the temple before maybe thousands of listeners, definitely hundreds. After he rose from the dead, Jesus appeared to over 500 people. So while there is maybe some bias by the writers of the New Testament, it's a bias towards what they perceived as the most common knowledge and truth.
Can I take you back to his early life and mm-hmm. describe for me what kind of society and world into which Jesus was born?
Jesus was born into, well, he was born into a Galilean family. In Galilee, there were lots of carpenters, there were lots of farmers. And that had a big impact, I think, on Jesus as he grew up in Galilee. It was almost inevitable that he'd become a carpenter himself, as his father was. And you can see through his teachings that he had considered and contemplated a lot about agriculture, horticulture, things like that, which was very popular in Galilee. And I think he was really appealing to a clear audience there, if you like. He was born into a world where kingdoms were rising and falling. Rome had taken over the area, and you have a lot of resentment towards these kingdoms that were on the rise by people who were being conquered. And among the conquered were the Jews of Palestine, and there were many groups that resented the Romans. In fact, later, a couple of decades after Jesus' exit from this world, the Jews went to war against the Romans, and the Jewish historian Josephus, who lived in the first century AD, he said that when the war came, thousands, tens of thousands of Galileans rushed to arms. Mm. So Jesus was entering a world that was very hostile, especially to his message of love.
And very brutal. You've got Herod ordering the slaughter of babies 2 years old and younger. It's that's actually a historic event.
It is.
And not that uncommon.
No, it wasn't. Not for Herod, anyway. Wow. He killed lots of people. He killed family members. He killed lots of the Pharisees. He killed, towards the end of his life, he wanted to be remembered. He wanted to be mourned in his kingdom. So he gave orders for for his soldiers to gather together all the leading Jews into a hippodrome. And the order was that once he died, they were all to be massacred, so that there would be mourning throughout all of his land upon his death. Now, he did die, obviously. Fortunately, the soldiers decided not to go through with the orders, and luckily, or blessedly maybe, I don't know, the people assembled lived to see another day.
But he was a shocker.
He was. He was pretty... Well, yeah.
Darren, the Bible doesn't intriguingly give us much about Jesus' growing up years at all. What sort of upbringing, knowing the history of the times and the place, what sort of upbringing would he have had, do you think?
Well, we can see many details of Jesus' youth in the Bible. Now, you're right, the Bible doesn't really talk about his youth in a narrative, but it does give us some indications as to what his youth was like. At the start of his ministry, and all the way through it as well, he quoted the Bible in Greek. So he must have been taught Greek at school. He spoke Aramaic. You might remember on the cross, he spoke a few Aramaic words. So that was probably his language of choice. He probably also knew a bit of Latin too. He talked with Pontius Pilate, and Pontius Pilate may have spoken Aramaic as Jesus did, but there's the possibility that Jesus was taught a range of languages at his school, and his knowledge of the scriptures means that he must have been taught, perhaps at a synagogue school. I would say that his upbringing was probably very typical of Galileans at the time. I think the main thing that marks Jesus out from other Galileans was who he was.
Yes.
Not his upbringing, not his education, but who he was.
And to those who had eyes and ears, it was evident from a very early stage who he was and where he was destined. We're with Darren Graham on Open House, author of The First Christians, Not Just Ancient History. It's a really good read, and I think an important kind of book to get your head around. Darren, when Jesus began his ministry as an adult, what kind of people was he bringing his message to in Galilee, where he began?
Well, in Galilee, it was an area that was fragmented between Jewish sects. You have your Pharisees and your Sadducees, who are mentioned in the Gospels. You also have another group called the Essenes. In the mid-20th century, a whole group of scrolls were found near a place called Qumran, just northwest of the Dead Sea. They're now called the Dead Sea Scrolls, and they offer us a whole range of writings that date to the time of Jesus. And in those writings, there is the concept that it is okay to love your neighbour, but it is also okay to hate your enemy. Now, Jesus taught we should love our enemy. Now, that is a teaching that at that time was revolutionary.
Yes, yes.
More than anything, it was a teaching that involves our deepest thoughts, our deepest heartfelt emotions, and it stands in very stark contrast to the religions and the society at the time, which only paid a lip service to their religions or didn't require any belief at all to be part of a religion. So Jesus was bringing into this world straight away, as soon as his ministry began, a deeper relationship with God that religions and society at the time did not have any other likeness for.
With that new commandment to love one another, though he ended on a cross, which is not an uncommon punishment for those times. The crucifixion was used a lot, wasn't it?
It was. It was the most demeaning, agonizing, brutal form of punishment at the time. In fact, it wasn't just the cross that was the punishment. There was the flogging, the beating leading up to it, the utter and humiliating, brutal agony that went with it. I think that shows very clearly the lengths to which Jesus was happy to go to for those who accept his message and example.
Have you done any thinking about this? When he died and then rose again, what kind of impact that would have had on his disciples, on their neighbourhoods? I mean, I transport myself back into that time and I can hardly imagine how I could believe it.
Well, some people didn't believe first off at all.
No.
Mary Magdalene, when she was in the garden just after Jesus rose from the dead, she saw him and she thought he was the gardener. She just didn't expect, no one expected him to come back from the dead. It says in the Bible that no one expected him to come back until after he had actually come back. Mm. And even his own brother James, Mary and Joseph had children, the Bible says. They had James, one of Jesus' brothers, just one of. And he didn't believe in Jesus as being the Messiah and Son of God all through his life until after Jesus rose from the dead and he saw him himself. Thomas was another disciple of Jesus. And when he heard the message that Jesus had risen from the dead, he didn't believe it. He said when he sees the scars of Jesus, when he puts his fingers into the wounds that Jesus suffered on the cross, then he would believe. And as the Bible teaches, Jesus did appear to Thomas, and Thomas believed and took the message, some say, all the way to India. Mm. He led a ministry not unlike that of Paul's in scope and geography and intensity, only he took it east, whereas Paul took his message of Jesus west to Rome and Spain.
Which brings us to the growth of the early church. And how did they do it? How did they grow from that tiny kind of scared bunch of people? I often think about this on the night that Jesus was crucified, not expecting him to rise from the dead. How did they go from that to becoming the official religion within a few hundred years of the entire empire?
Well, I think this is the main theme of the New Testament, and it's the main point that I'm trying to get across in my book too, and that is conviction. After Jesus rose from the dead, the rising from the dead was a historical fact. It wasn't a made-up tale to propagate to the world. Over 500 people saw Jesus after he rose from the dead. And I think it is the solid conviction in that that drove people like Peter and Paul on. And I think maybe one difference between the early church and generations of the church that has followed is this conviction. You might hear some Christians today talking about a leap of faith, or you might hear some skeptics of the Christian beliefs to say it's blind faith. Well, for the early Christians, it wasn't anything like that at all. In fact, Paul, the Apostle Paul, said that faith is being certain of things unseen. Now, he used that word certain, and I think that characterizes the early church. They were convinced totally in what they believed in, and I think that drove them on to do what they did.
There was also a lot of care for each other and a lot of love in the early church, which made it a very attractive thing and a very distinctive thing.
Absolutely.
To lots that was going on around them. Perhaps that was one of the reasons as well.
Well, it was different to other religions going around in that way. The Essenes had this rule where when you joined the Essenes, which was a Jewish sect, yes, that you had to pool your belongings. That was the closest thing to the early Christians at that time. But the early Christians, when they met together, they willingly gave. It wasn't a law or a principle to live by forced on them. It was something they did freely. They shared love to the point where they staked their lives on it.
Yes.
In fact, Peter and Paul and many other early Christians died for the cause. It was something that they believed in with love, not with force.
Mm. Darren, can I ask you this question? In the process of writing the book, it's one thing to deal with history as an academic kind of exercise, but has it done much for your faith as well?
Oh, it has. It has. Okay. It's helped me articulate my beliefs, my discoveries in historical inquiry. It's helped me realize that faith in Jesus isn't something that we have to doubt. There are always moments of doubt for all of us, but I think for the vast majority of us, they're just moments. And these days, if I doubt, it is a very fleeting moment, because I know through my life, through my historical inquiry, that faith in Jesus is, as he said, building on solid rock. Now, that said, there would be countless people out there listening who aren't historians. There are many ways to reach the point where we know that what we believe is true.
So it's not just a book for history buffs, is it?
It's not. Well, it was written to encourage Christians, but it was also written to show people who aren't historians, aren't Christians, aren't interested in history at all, whether in the Bible or elsewhere, to show them that what us crazy Jesus freaks believe in, it isn't that crazy at all.
Yeah.
It's solid fact, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Check it out. Darren Graham, thank you so much for coming into Open House. Darren's the author of The First Christians, Not Just Ancient History. Where can people get the book?
People can get the book two main ways. I'll tell you them both. You can get them at Koorong website, www.koorong.com, koorong.com, or you can ring me directly and ask me yourself for a copy. I live in Sydney, so it's obviously an 02 number. You can call me on 45 77 55 96. That's 45 77 55 96.
And we'll put the details up on our Open House Community Facebook page. Darren, thanks so much. It's been great to meet you and talk with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.